And a preacher stood up to preach with a Band-Aid on his chin. And he said, "I'm sorry about the Band-Aid, but I cut my chin shaving this morning when I was thinking about the sermon." And one of the congregation said, "Why didn't you think about your chin and cut the sermon?"
The trouble we've had with microphones today has reminded me of another story. You know, the congregation got used to the preacher saying, "The peace of the Lord be with you," and they would automatically respond, "And also with you." But on this occasion, when he went to say that, the microphone wasn't working, so instead he said, "There seems to be something wrong with my mic." And they said, "And also with you." Okay, so Joseph's obviously an important character. Half my sermon this morning was going to be repeating the story of Joseph, so that's got clear of 5 minutes at least. And we've heard it from a few different angles this morning, one especially different, but that's good because we have a fresh view of Joseph and this very important character in Hebrew history. Almost half the book of Genesis is about Joseph. In fact, there are 11,141 words about Joseph in the book of Genesis. How do I know? Because I have Microsoft Word. Actually, the whole Gospel of Mark isn't much longer than this part of the Bible. Joseph in the Bible is mentioned 212 times, but of course it's not all about him. There's other Josephs. Some of you will know that. And I just want to put this into perspective. Philip is mentioned 31 times, and Judith is mentioned once. There's no mention of Kylie anywhere. So why is Joseph important? What did he do that was so great? I love the way it says on Philip Yancey on today's bulletin. He says, "Joseph was a spoiled brat, favoured by his father over 10 older brothers. He got the fancy clothes and preferential treatment and apparently thought he deserved them. When he had a dream of his brothers bowing down to him, he had the gall to tell them all about it." So did that make him great? Don't think so. Find a guy who aggravated his brothers. He got sold into slavery. That didn't make him great. He was a good slave, but there were plenty of them around. He was a poor judge of women. Okay, that didn't make a whole lot of people famous. He was jailed for a crime he didn't commit. He interpreted some dreams. He got a good job. He did it well, but plenty of people do that. He played rather strange games with his brothers there at the end. And he caused his family to migrate to a foreign country where later they all became slaves and had to escape. So this is not a recipe for enduring fame, I would have thought. So what is it that made Joseph famous? Well, I've had the mixed blessing of having met quite a few people who the world considers famous during my life, and I think my favourite story, though, is about Davo. Davo reckoned that he knew everybody who was famous, and everybody who was famous knew him. And he was always ranting on about it, so one day Davo's boss decided to call his bluff, and he said, "Okay, Davo, you know Mel Gibson?" And Davo said, "Yeah, of course I know Mel Gibson. We're old friends. I can prove it." So Davo and his boss get on an airplane and they fly to Hollywood and they knock on Mel Gibson's door. And Mel opens the door and he shouts, "Davo, great to see you. Come on in, bring your friend. Join me for lunch." Well, the boss is kind of surprised and stunned about this. But he's still a bit sceptical. And as they leave Mel Gibson's house, the boss says to Davo, "Well, I don't know, that might have just been a bit of luck, you know, that I happen to pick someone who you do know and who knows you and that he's famous." No. "Anyone, name anyone," he says to his boss. So the boss replies, "Well, how about Prime Minister John Howard?" "Little Johnny? Oh, yeah, we're great mates, little Johnny and me. Let's fly to Canberra." So off they go to Canberra. Davo and his boss, they're walking through the Great Hall in Canberra. And John Howard spots them and he hurries over. "G'day, Davo. How you doing? What a surprise. I'm just on my way to a cabinet meeting, but they can wait. Let's go and have a cup of coffee with you and your friend." So they go and do that. Well, the boss is a bit shaken by all this, but he's still not totally convinced. So after they leave Parliament House, he expresses his doubts to Davo, who again implores him to name anyone else. So Davo's boss says, "President Bush." "Okay," says Davo, "I've known George W. for a long time. So we'll fly off to Washington and find out." So Davo and his boss are assembled with the masses on the lawns of the White House when Davo says, "Look, this isn't going to work, standing here in the crowd. I can't catch George W.'s eye with all these people around, but I know all the security guards here, so just let me go inside and I'll go and say hi to George W. and I'll come out on the Oval Office balcony with him. And Davo disappears into the crowd, headed towards the White House front steps. Well, sure enough, half an hour later, Davo emerges with President Bush on the balcony. But by the time Davo returns, he finds that his boss has had a heart attack. He's surrounded by paramedics. So working his way through to the boss's side, Davo asks him, what happened? His boss looks up and says, look, I was doing fine until you and the president came out on the balcony and the Japanese tourist next to me asked, who's that on the balcony with Davo? Okay, some of you will have heard various iterations of that story involving the Pope. Well, Joseph clearly wasn't like Davo. Joseph wasn't into fame like Davo was. In fact, within a generation or two after Joseph died, nobody in Egypt remembered him. The last verses of what Sandy read about Stephen's address to the Sanhedrin, a king arose in Egypt who knew not Joseph. So within a couple of generations, he was forgotten as far as the Egyptians were concerned. He'd saved Egypt and most of the known world from starvation, and yet he was soon forgotten. But the memory of Joseph was preserved among his own people. And the question is why? Well, I don't think it has anything to do with his technicolor dream coat. I don't think it has anything to do with how good his work was with Potiphar. I don't think it has anything to do with him being a victim of sexual harassment by that earlier version of Mrs. Robinson, Mrs. Potiphar. It hasn't anything to do with his ability to interpret dreams. I mean, are your dreams like that? My dreams aren't like that. You know, I'm walking down a street, then I'm in a car, and then my grandmother's with me, and then she's not, and I'm flying an aeroplane, and it's Friday, but actually it's Tuesday, and that's what my dreams are like. I mean, if I heard someone tell me a dream like that, I'd say, oh yeah, that means 7 years of prosperity, 7 years of drought. I mean, it's kind of cool. I don't think that's what made him famous, just because he could interpret those dreams. And I don't think it has anything to do with his role as an Egyptian administrator, because pretty soon a pharaoh arose who knew not Joseph. I think Joseph remains an important figure in history today because he realized three important truths. And I think they're these. First, you are not important. Secondly, your life is not about you. And thirdly, you are not in control. You are not important. Your life is not about you. You are not in control. I am not important. Jesus said we could only find our true self by first losing our false self. We had to become like a little child again. Indeed, we have to be born again. My life is not about me. And this is so hard for us to learn because it's so against the culture. It's so countercultural. A revolution of the mind is required to begin to believe that our lives are not actually about us. Everything that we hear in the world tells us differently. But it's just like discovering that the earth is not the center of the universe. Now, perhaps we take this for granted now that the earth revolves around the sun, but when Copernicus first suggested that that was the case, the idea was condemned. Nobody could accept it because everybody believed it was so much a part of everybody's reality that the earth was the center of the whole universe and that the universe revolved around the earth, that nobody could accept it. And it required an adjustment to people's sense of reality, a complete change of mind in order to accept that. Well, not only is not the earth the center of the universe, but nor are you, nor am I. And thirdly, I'm not in control. Again, this is very hard for us. Everywhere we hear the messages about taking control of our lives, but it's wrong. Any addict who's gone through the 12-step recovery program knows that you've got to first admit that you are powerless before you can find true power. And I think one of the paradoxes of life is that we must first learn self-control so that later in life we can learn to surrender it. And I think Joseph's greatness came from these understandings. He knew that he was not important. He knew that his life was not about him. And he knew that he was not in control. See, maybe when he got his technicolor dream coat, he thought he was pretty cool, but he soon learned that clothes do not make the man. His brothers took away his coat and threw him down a well, a hole, as they said last week. Maybe it was in that dark hole that true maturity began to dawn
in Joseph's soul. Soon after that, he was an unimportant slave. He was not important. As a slave, he was a non-person by definition. His life was not about him anymore. And he was under someone else's control, so he was not in control. Yet out of this experience came greatness and significance. It seemed Joseph worked out how to give away his life and to tap into a life of greater importance. He found out that if life was not about Joseph, who it was all about. He found out that if he was not in control, who was in control? An old missionary couple had been working in Africa for years and were returning to New York to retire. They had no pension, their health was broken, they were defeated, discouraged, and anxious about how they would survive. They discovered they were booked on the same ship as American President Teddy Roosevelt, who was returning from one of his big game hunting expeditions. No one paid any attention to them. They watched the fanfare that accompanied the president's entourage, with passengers trying to catch a glimpse of the great man. As the ship moved across the ocean, the old missionary said to his wife, "Something is wrong. Why should we have given our lives in faithful service for God in Africa all these many years and have no one to care a thing about us? Here, this man comes back from a hunting trip and everybody makes a big fuss about him and nobody gives two hoots for us." "Dear, you shouldn't feel that way," his wife said. "I can't help it," he said. "It just doesn't feel right." Well, when the ship docked in New York, a band was waiting to greet the president. The mayor and other dignitaries were there. The papers were full of the president's arrival, and no one noticed the missionary couple. They slipped off the ship. They found a cheap flat, hoping the next day to see what they could do to make a living in the city. And that night, the man's spirit broke down completely. He said to his wife, "I can't take this. God is not treating us fairly." His wife replied, "Why don't you go to the bedroom and tell that to the Lord?" A short time later, he came out from the bedroom, but now his face was completely different. His wife asked, "What happened, dear?" "The Lord settled it with me," he said. "I told him how bitter I was that the president should receive this tremendous homecoming, when no one met us as we returned home. And when I finished, it seemed as though the Lord put his hand on my shoulder and simply said, 'But you're not home yet.'" The missionary and Joseph had discovered the same thing. Your life is not important, but God has a plan for it that is important. Your life is not about you. It's all about God and what he is doing in the world. You are not in control, but God is. On the back of the pew sheet, there's a list of spiritual lessons from Joseph. And the first one is what I want to talk about. The circumstances of our lives are not as important as the way we respond to them. Joseph had discovered the secret of living over the circumstances. I guess you've often used the phrase "under the circumstances" yourself. You know, under the circumstances, I could have had a better sermon, but I was very busy and I didn't have time to prepare it as much as I could have, so this is what we've got under the circumstances. Or under the circumstances, I could have done better, but, you know, the circumstances prevailed. Well, I had a French friend who preached a very memorable sermon on the topic over the circumstances, and I've never forgotten it. And he explained to me, you know, in how many of you have learned a foreign language, including English, if English is not your mother tongue? Okay, a few of you. Well, if, especially with European languages, you've discovered, no doubt, that prepositions are a movable feast, okay? Prepositions are not standard across all European languages. I mean, if you've learned Chinese or if you come from Chinese, you'll understand that prepositions are just a completely new idea. But at least in European languages, we have prepositions. And in case you're not sure, if you can't remember year 12 or 9 English, prepositions are these words like after, to, under, over, and so on. Well, the reason this French friend of mine decided to preach under the circumstances, because in French, you don't say under the circumstances, you say in the circumstances. We use the word dans, which means in, usually, in French.
except in English, if you were translating directly from French into English, you would be saying in the circumstances. Now, we do that sometimes in English, but not usually. Similarly, in German, if you say that we're going to Sydney, you would use the German preposition nach, which is usually translated after. Afternoon in German is Nachmittags, afternoon. So when an English speaker says in German, I'm going to Sydney, it sounds like I'm going after Sydney. Well, it sounds to your English mind. Now, this is all irrelevant, except to say, explain to you why my French friend decided that he would preach over the circumstance, because he observed, because of coming across the languages, how odd it was to be actually literally under the circumstances. So, anyway, the English lesson or the language lesson aside, we've got this under the circumstances idea. Now, the thing about Joseph is that he did not live under the circumstances. The circumstances did not define his life. He realized that the circumstances had made him unimportant. Under the circumstances, he was a nobody. He realized that his life was not about him. Under the circumstances, he had no life to call his own. He was owned by somebody else. He realized that he was not in control. Under the circumstances, he could not control what was happening to him. Mrs. Potiphar could say what she liked, and he was a goner. But Joseph did not live under the circumstances. Joseph lived over the circumstances. And I reckon the reason that Joseph is greatly remembered is because he was completely surrendered to God and the circumstances that God wanted to create for him. But Joseph knew what was important in life, and it wasn't Joseph. It was God. Joseph knew that God could make something of his circumstances. He had an enduring faith that some good would come from his suffering, and his faith did not go unrewarded. Joseph knew that his life was not about Joseph. Indeed, God had a plan. God wanted to show himself to be a God who cares for the poor, a God who cares for the slave, a God who cares for the imprisoned. But also he wanted to show himself as a saving God, a God who redeems, a God who lifts people over the circumstances. And that's why this story has endured. Not because of Joseph, he's unimportant, but because of what the story tells us about God. He's important, and life is about God. God is in control. So Joseph was not buried under the circumstances because he knew God, who was clearly over the circumstances and who was working out his purpose as the years succeed to years. Joseph's role, as is ours, was to yield ourselves, to yield our lives and our circumstances to God and watch what surprising things happen. Joseph had discovered that your life is not important, but God has a plan for it that is important. That your life is not about you, it's all about God and what he's doing in your world. He learned that you are not in control, but God is. May we continue to be blessed as we give ourselves away every day to God and his will for our lives. Amen.